It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. March is Women's History Month, which celebrates the achievements of women. In addition, it shines a spotlight on their impact and contributions to society. Here to look at the contributions of women in history in business is Rebecca Harris, Director of the Center for Women's Entrepreneurship at Chatham University. Rebecca Harris, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
It's nice to see you, Paul. How are you?
Well, thank you.
Good.
How did Women's History Month come about?
Well, it really should be Women's History Year, of course, but we'll settle for a month. Okay, Paul?
There's probably not enough time in the 31 days of March to cover everything.
We'll take the month.
We'll do as much as we
can. So, right. It had its origins in a national celebration in 1981 when Congress passed an act which authorized and requested the president to proclaim the week beginning March 7th as Women's History Week. And then that happened over the next 5 years till, of course, there was a little pressure. And then we got to an act which enacted Women's History Month. And since that time, presidents have then issued a series of proclamations annually. And we've had Women's History Month, which has been fabulous.
Now, I'm going to couch this as a rhetorical question, okay? Why does Women's History Month exist? Give us the why here.
Besides just assuming that we should celebrate women because women need to be celebrated all of the time. But we're just, okay, we've set that aside. It's celebrated both locally and worldwide and really to look at the achievements of women, their impact and contributions to society throughout history. Looking at women and historically what they've done, because sometimes these contributions aren't really recognized, and certainly things are much better now than they were long ago, but we still have a lot of progress to make. And when you look at some just basic facts in history, we didn't get the right to vote until 1920.
Which is incredible.
Yes.
When you think about it, it's not even been 100 years yet.
I mean, 1920, and here we are. I mean, unbelievable. The Equal Pay Act came in 1963, and here women are still making 70 cents on the dollar to men. And in 1974, the Equal Credit Opportunity Act, which is very important for women connected with business, which was giving women the right to obtain credit in their own name. So part of the reason to have this celebration is to really look at some of the progress we've made and to talk about what we need to do going forward.
Is there one organization which started the work to honor women's history?
Yeah, it's interesting. As we did our research, we found out about the National Women's History Project, and they were founded in 1980. It's an educational nonprofit organization, and their mission is to recognize and celebrate the diverse and historic accomplishments of women. But by providing programs and educational materials and everything else. And they came up with a theme of the year. So every year there's a different theme for the National Women's History Month. So that's key. And the theme this year is? Do you want to take a guess?
The theme?
Yes, there's a theme. So every year we now have a different theme for celebrating that this month. So
I'm just going to let you share that with me.
Okay, yeah, come on, Paul. Theme. So when you think about it, it's STEM. It's technology and innovation, which they welcome contributions from the public, and the public then sends in lots of different ideas. And this year they decided that the theme was going to be women inspiring innovation through imagination, celebrating women in science, technology, engineering, and math. And so I think
that goes way back. I mean, you could go back to Madame Curie, right, but even before her.
Right. But when you think about it, this is really, when you think about that theme and you think about what women are doing today, that is a huge part of the business of women and the fact that we just don't have enough women in STEM. And so what they do every year when they develop a theme is they have honorees. So a couple of the honorees I just wanted to mention, because these are pretty amazing women. Some of them are no longer with us, but they recognize them because of their current contributions. There's a woman named Hattie Alexander who lived from 1901 to 1968. She was a pediatrician and microbiologist, and she was one of the first scientists to identify and study antibiotic resistance. Now think about that. That's become a huge problem now. And so she was actually studying that way back when, and we certainly know that antibiotics in the drug industry is a huge business. There's a woman named Patricia Bath. She was born in 1942. She's an ophthalmologist and an inventor. And she broke ground for both women and African Americans in medicine and ophthalmology. And she was the first African American woman doctor to receive a patent. So we look at some of these women, we think, all right, this is great. And these women are contributing significantly to business and to the business of STEM. And I think that's really important. So they found some great women, and we are definitely applauding them.
And how did the theme come about? And I understand that women were honored in this field, but you said that people voted?
People voted. What happened is lots of people in the public just sent in ideas, and they have a committee. And the committee voted on what they thought was the most appropriate theme. And I think this theme seems to be very apropos of where we are in terms of innovation and creativity and STEM, and really encouraging young women to get into STEM as early as grade school and high school. It has to start early. So
we're talking with our business correspondent, Rebecca Harris, director of the Center for Women's Entrepreneurship at Chatham University, about Women's History Month, its origins, what it is celebrating in particular this year, and the theme of this year's Women's History Month. And you mentioned, as we were talking about equal pay, which is something that we are all still striving to see among men and women. The figure that you mentioned was women are earning 70 cents on the dollar.
77.
77.
77
cents.
So it's even better than 70, right.
But still not equal.
No,
77 cents on the dollar, right, that men earn. We do have a Lilly Ledbetter Act now.
Right,
helping to level the playing field?
I think a lot of things are helping to level the playing field. I think that women are going in now, and they're better negotiators, because the key is that if you don't negotiate your first salary, then everything builds upon that. Women traditionally earn $500,000 less over the course of their lifetimes, and this is from studies that have been done, because they don't negotiate their first salary. So women are learning to ask more. So a lot is happening in the business and the workplace to enable women to really progress. And we've talked about this before, that we know that companies that have women in the C-suite, which is the management suite, and on board of directors actually have better bottom lines and do much better. So we know that having these women in positions of leadership is very important. You look at what's happening at Yahoo now. No sitting at home anymore and working, but I think I've read a lot of studies over the last couple of days about that decision, and I think she decided that she needed to bring people in to work together, because if the model had been working with everybody at home, she wouldn't have changed it. Something was broken. So when you look at women in positions of leadership, I think I applaud them, and I think they really do a lot to help our country.
We have seen over the years women required unfairly to have to make a choice, and I'm wondering to what extent this is today. But years ago, if a woman wanted to work, for example, if a woman was teaching at an elementary school, there was a stipulation she could not be married.
Right.
Women could not be seen, especially if they were working women in a bar, couldn't be seen smoking in public. These kinds of rules, but they were especially hard on the women who chose to go into the teaching profession. Are we getting to the point where women are not having to make that choice so much?
I think women still have very hard choices to make in terms of how do you balance family and professional life. A lot of women have to do that, whether the family is taking care of their own children or taking care of aged parents or whatever family entails. It's a very large sense of family these days. I think women, though, in general, have to make a lot more decisions. I'm a firm believer that you can have it all, but you might not be able to have it all at the same time. So I think that women still encounter more decision-making in the workplace than men do. But I do think it's getting better, Paul. I really do.
Can I, if I may, bring some of your personal story into this? You're obviously a very accomplished woman. And you, I'm sure, at some point, at different points along the way, had to make some choices. How did you do it?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think the key is really looking at where your strengths are at that time, what the needs are on the home front, if you have a partner or spouse who is very supportive, as is mine, where you can go and what you can do and how you make those choices, because I think really that's critical as women progress, and to know when you're ready to go forward or when you need to just sort of hang and do what you're doing. And I think all those are legitimate, and they're very important. When we look at the number of women in the United States, Paul, we have 158 million women in the United States. which is just huge. And 57% of those are females 16 and over who participate in the labor force. So we have a lot of women who are working and in the labor force who are going to be dealing with these kind of issues and questions as they move along. And we know that women who own their own businesses are bringing in $1.2 trillion in revenue to the United States. So again, looking at the business of what women are doing, the number of women-owned businesses in 2007, which was the last time the census data came up, was 7.8 million. And so, and we know that they employ over 8 million people. So this is a big economic push. But I also can tell you that as of 2009, again, when this last census was done, that 85 million women were mothers. And I think that's probably one of the hardest jobs I've ever had. So what's the compensation for a mom? I've read some studies that if you were paid for everything you did, you'd make about $120,000 a year. That sounds like a pretty good job, huh, Paul?
Well, I think my mother would agree.
She would concur, right? Am I right?
Yes. Well, I have two brothers, so it wasn't just me, but between the three of us, yes, she would have been earning all $120,000 of those dollars.
Well,
what do you say? There's still a contrarian point of view out there that may be slowing progress to a point that some women subscribe to, and it is articulated probably most often by women like Phyllis Schlafly, mm-hmm, for example, mm-hmm, who mm-hmm. say what you want about her politics, and there are plenty of people who disagree with her, but she is an intelligent woman, mm-hmm. a graduate of Washington mm-hmm. University in St. Louis, which is the Harvard of the Midwest, as they call it, and she has been out there articulating policy. She got her education, but she says that women belong at home and should be subservient to men. So as that point of view is still out there, how difficult does it make it for women to make progress?
Right. Right.
Especially when it comes to equal pay for equal work.
I actually grew up in St. Louis, so I know a little bit about Phyllis Schlafly. And the one thing I always said to myself is, wait a sec, isn't she going out there and doing exactly what she says she's not supposed to be doing? I always thought that was a little odd, don't you, Paul? I think that view of a woman staying home and just being at home is not as popular as it used to be. And I think that women are beginning to realize that they really do have a place in the workforce. They're important to the workforce and important as leaders, and really imparting that to their children is equally as important. Last night at Chatham University, we celebrated the 10 women who were honored by the Secretary of State International Women of Courage. And I was speaking to a woman from Somalia, and she said, the men in Somalia respect the women more when these women are working and have a business, as opposed to the women who just stay home and have children. And I think here they are in Somalia saying that. So I think we certainly have made a lot of progress, but I think we certainly do have a lot of progress still to be made.
So let's talk about the connection to women in business.
Well, and I think really that connection is that as women can begin to support themselves much more in the workforce, as they can continue to educate themselves, as they become integrated into the business community, it's a win-win for everyone. And some of the management styles that women bring to the table are very important. Things like management that includes inclusive management as opposed to top-down management, looking at all sides of a story, being less risk-averse, which at times serves women very well and at times is not so great. And so if you're in a boardroom with a bunch of people and a woman says, you know, this doesn't feel good, this doesn't seem good, that sort of female intuition, in many cases it's very valid and a company would do well by listening to that. And I think that women growing up through the ranks and pulling other women along is very, very important. And women live longer than men. So if you decide not to work but then have to get back into the workforce, it's pretty tough, Paul. So I think concessions being made to help women both work and take care of families if they need to do that, all of us need to be very attentive to that.
Also important to mention is that there have been some recent studies that show that a lot of women are very unhappy in the workplace, and part of it might be the equal pay issue. Men are as well, for whatever reason, you reach that glass ceiling, whatever it happens to be. But how should women deal with that? How should that be addressed?
Right. Well, I think if possible, you really need to evaluate where you are in a workforce. If you're really that unhappy, there are three theories that you learn in the classic business school organizational management class. us, which is you can stay in a situation and accept it. You can stay in a situation and change it, or you can exit. And so I think that women need to feel secure enough that they can then look ahead and say, you know what, I can stay here. I need to make some changes. I need to go somewhere else in the organization, or it's really time for me to exit. Let me get some additional skills. There's millions of opportunities to self-educate, and we have wonderful resources in this city to do that, and then to go to the next place, which is just fine. And remember, try to be passionate about what you're doing, because it's most of your life is spent working. It really is.
Before we wrap this up, some events, maybe one or two activities taking place here in Pittsburgh to celebrate women.
Yes, and if you haven't heard about the Gorilla Girls, which is performing at the Carnegie Lecture Hall on March 20th as part of the Carnegie Museums of Art and Natural History, that is a definite must attend. So I want people to check that out and look at that. And I know have listed a bunch of different things on your website as well.
Very good. And you can go to our website and link to those at WESA.FM. Rebecca Harris, as always, pleasure visiting with you.
Thanks so much, Paul.
To leave comments before or after our broadcast, call and leave a message at 412-256-8783. We might use your voice on the air. Tomorrow on Essential Pittsburgh, the actor portraying legendary Justice Thurgood Marshall. Until then, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Thank you for listening.